Welcome to Advertising Week Europe 2024 in audio, powered by The Barbershop. In this podcast, we'll bring you the latest insights and trends from industry leaders in advertising and marketing. Join us as we dive into discussions that shape the future of our industry.
Hi. Well, it's very serious, isn't it?
I know. Well, I was really excited to get that big cheer. And in fact, when we first talked to Advertising Week about getting Take That here on stage with us, I was super excited because I naturally assumed my role would be to, evict Lulu from Relight My Fire. I was ready for it. I got mic'd up. And then they told me we're actually going to talk about creative partnerships. That is still true, right? God, I was just giving them one more chance to get rid of Lulu and re-record the thing with me.
It's a day off today.
Yeah, that's fair. For Lulu, it's a day off today. Not really for you guys, because you're here with us. So at the moment, you guys are on a massive record-breaking arena tour all around the UK, Europe, Australia, beyond. And it's the biggest selling artist tour of the year. So I think you're playing over 80 dates, is that right? Yeah, to nearly a million fans. Tell us, how is it to be back on the road playing these big arenas?
Well, I think we're all relieved, aren't we?
Yeah.
There was definitely a moment 3 or 4 years ago where we thought, will we ever be back on stage again? I think most artists went through that. So it was a huge relief to us to be able to have the chance to go back out on tour. And I think possibly starting with a question about the tour probably tells people of where we're at in our lives, because we're playing countries we've never even played before on this tour. We're hugely ambitious when it comes to touring and with our music, and we're really proud to be playing the amount of dates we're playing. I think the tour finishes at the end of November, so we're basically on tour all of this year, and it's been terrific so far. And like I say, we're looking forward to going to many new places we've never played before.
Yeah, how exciting. What would you say, Mark?
Well, I think for us, when we're the lovely thing about a tour is it brings us all together. It's a way for us to sort of with each other, but also we have this wonderful team around us. And the thoughts for the tour process begin like 2 years in advance. We start planning those things and what that's going to look like. 2 years ago, we were like, okay, in 2024, we'll hopefully can get back up on the road. We'll make a new record. So those things, the creative process of us going on the road is a part that we really enjoy, and it's something we take great pride in, and something that we've done for many, many years. And so it's lovely to be part of those conversations, but also to be together and for us to come together and start to build what that looks like and how that is going to be received and how we can best present ourselves on that stage. Obviously, when we first started, we were teenagers. We were all like 17, 18 years old. So, but as time's gone on and as a brand of Take That has become more of a, then we didn't know we were a brand. We thought we were just like some kids out of Manchester. Like, yeah, this is great. We got to wear some feeler trainers and spin on our heads. And that's all we wanted to do, you know. And a room like this, I mean, there's 10 times more people in this room than what we played to in our early gigs in Manchester. We were playing to like 10 people. Most of them are families. But we're still in feeler trainers and spinning on our heads. But at some point, I think as time has gone on and as we have become older and sort of developed the band and grown into ourselves, we start, obviously what we do, we take a lot more, we see ourselves a bit more like a brand. How do we sort of reach more people? How do we grow as a band? And that starts in the conversation in the studio musically. You know, how can we develop musically? How can we develop on stage? We start to look into new ways of presenting ourselves because we can't spin on our heads anymore because we're a bit old. So we have to find new ways to be able to present ourselves. And that's been, I suppose, the the wonderful thing about being in Take That for 35 years now is the growth that we as a band have made over that time. You know, when we present our shows, in the old days, somebody go, oh, this is where you're going, this is what you're doing, this is what you wear, and we were like, okay. But now it's not like that. We take a lot of pride in how we present ourselves on stage, how we present ourselves in our music, in all the things that we do. It's been a beautiful thing to be able to grow into, and I think that's the lovely thing about being in Take That, is it feels like we're always expanding, we're always growing.
That's a good point about, I think, the relationship that's at the core.
Whichever one was the good one.
Well, to be honest,
there's a lot of them.
I like the one about spinning on your head best, but I was gonna focus on the relationship part, because you guys were friends. That's how you started out. And it'd be interesting to know, I think the creative people in the room, there's a lot of creative teams who work together. How has your relationship kind of powered what you do, and how has it changed over time?
Our relationship as a group?
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, obviously, I mean, we're here after, you know, nearly 35 years. And I guess when you look at the 90s, when none of us really had responsibilities, really, you know, none of us had children, none of us were married.
They were brilliant years, weren't they?
Brilliant.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Brilliant years.
They were absolutely amazing. But yes, I don't really feel that we found our niche and we found our relationship with each other until we actually learned about real life, you know, and that was probably the period between 96 and 2005, where a couple of us had had our own kids.
Yep.
And you start learning about responsibilities and things like that. And then you get together and then you actually realize what you want, because obviously in the 90s, you know, you have your first management and they're telling you what to do. You're doing this, you're doing that, you're going there, you're going over there, and you didn't really have a life, really. Or at least it felt that way. And then when you get back, you sort of decide, well, this is us now. There's four of us, and we've got to sort of take on board ourselves and take responsibility for where we want to go in life and where we want to go as a group. And but as far as our relationship, yeah, I mean, we've got an amazing relationship. Regardless of people coming and going, we still have a great relationship with those people too.
Gary always jokes that he's known us longer than his wife.
Yeah, and it's fantastic. And here we are, still getting on with each other, and we all want the same thing. Yeah, great friends.
We try and create an atmosphere, you know, basically, you know, all the things we talk about, our tour or whatever, all that usually starts with some music for us. It's the bit that brings us all together. It brings us from across the world into a room together, because that's our familiar ground. That's where we always found the way the music showed us where we were going always. So for us, that's the main anchor. It's the reason we're here. It's the reason why we work so hard at our personal relationships. It's the reason we work so hard at our tour, at the companies that we work with, our record label, our management, because the music, without the music, all that doesn't mean anything. So we take it so seriously, the music. It's still the bit that we put the most time, the most effort in. And from the music then comes the opportunities, comes the name of the tour, comes the reason why you tour. It all starts with the music. And I think that's something we learned when we came back after, like Howard said, the 90s years, which always seems like a bit of a blur to us. We were kids. And as we come back, in 2005, we came back as adults. And so we saw this situation, this group, this entity as adults, and think, right, well, how do we look after this vessel? And it starts with looking after each other. And if you can look after each other and give each other the space and the respect and the time and the appreciation and the environment where they can be themselves and be free and create and not be laughed at and be taken seriously, It bores good work, that does. And it makes it easier to work as a team. So the music and the personal relationships, it's always where it starts and ends for us.
And And talking about the music, obviously you guys have had so much success, and I've actually got a few stats. I am a little bit nerdy. And just in case anyone in the room doesn't know some of the stats, I believe you have the fastest selling album of the 21st century. I definitely don't. 12 number one singles, also no for me. 7 chart topping albums, again, no. None of these I've achieved. And your latest album, This Life, was the biggest selling domestic album of the year. And as we mentioned already, you're now on the biggest selling artist of tour of any UK artist. So none of that really exists without the fans. So you guys have got some really committed, enduring fans, but you must have also made a lot of new fans over the years to be able to kind of have that continued success. Tell me about the relationship with them.
I think, I'm sure we've all got a little bit to say in it. I think it really starts from grassroots, really. You know, when we first together as a band, when we first formed, we would go doing your under 18s, your over 18s, your gay clubs, whatever it may be, we would do anything and everything. And our manager came up with, obviously this was the time before any social media or YouTube or Instagram, whatever. And we had like a mailing list where we would put these cards and we would get them to put their addresses on.
That's it.
And we'd personally send out letters and invites to all these fans, and bit by bit, this thing would grow, and you'd get letters sent to your house and you get letters sent to the office, and you would personally try and reply to as many of these people as you could. And I believe it sort of started there, where the seed started to grow. And again, I think from when you're talking about a different kind of fan base, and you know, we now, from the second time round of being together from 2005, we now see lots of men in the audience. We see mothers with their daughters bringing them their, you know, with signs saying first concert ever, and we love seeing that. It's amazing. We love seeing the fan base grow. You know, obviously, we know that people might disappear and they might not want to be fans anymore. That's acceptable. But we love it when we see that new, those fresh faces.
Oh, you're nice, because you said that's acceptable. I don't think that is acceptable, Howard. you're too reasonable a man. But look, you touched on an important point, which was in the 90s, there was no social media. There was nothing. In many ways, that was the highlight of my life. Nobody saw the terrible things I do. And there weren't as many bad photos of me online, let's be honest. But for you guys, you've actually used social media in quite an interesting way to kind of bring the fans, people who are interested in you, more into your world. So you have a Live from the Dressing Room social series. Tell me a bit about why you do that.
Well, we also recognise that a lot of our audience can't travel. Yep. And a lot of our audience don't have money to be able to come to places like Manchester and London to watch these concerts. And I think a lot of the time we see, you know, we go out in London and we look in the audience as fans from South America, and you just think, well, there's outside of this arena, isn't that, there's a whole world of eyes who want to see you and want to see what you're doing. And I think social media plugs that hole very nicely, of being able to let the whole world in on what we're doing right now. I think it has been a, you know, we're an act that, like Howard said, I remember that. Do you remember the yellow box we used to have? So that was the start of our database. Before we had a record label, we used to walk out on stage and we'd put this yellow box on one side and we would throw leaflets into the audience. And in these leaflets, you had to fill your name and address out and you put it in the yellow box. And we'd leave the gig and this yellow box would be full. And when we signed to RCA Records in 91, they didn't have databases for artists. And we had 500,000 of those names and addresses, which they mailed out to tell them that our single was coming.
Was it like a yellow trunk by that point? Like it, really massive?
Definitely heavier, yes. Definitely a bit heavier.
And it's interesting now seeing the power of social media and how easy it is to access, you know, people watching and looking at this thing. And so for our sake, what we try and put on there are always things like, you know, where we're performing, where we're singing, where we're talking about our music, where we're talking about what we do. And it seems to work great. The fans seem to really enjoy it.
Is that why you do it too, Mark?
Well, I think that, I mean, we have children as well, so we've learned a lot of our social media skills through our kids because they know how to work it much better than we do. I'm like, how do I do like a video like that? And they're like, they help us out. But I think it's a wonderful tool for us to communicate.
Yep.
And I think that's one thing that, and it's quite instant in that communication as well. So we can feel like the relationship, we can expand our family. It's a family, really. And then that's what you can expand that through social media. And that's what it's been really great for us to be able to do, to be able to communicate with our audience, to tell them what's coming up, to tell them if nothing's coming up, you know, to be able to say, oh, listen, we're going, you know, but if we're going quiet for a little bit, we're going to go in the studio and we'll be back with a new record. But it's just been a wonderful way for us to communicate and to grow. And I think that's, we talked about it earlier, as a band we've grown. And I think our relationship with our audience has grown over those years as well. And we've found new ways to communicate with them. And we're still learning, you know, as we go along, you know, we can now turn a phone on. And
It's exciting as artists, because obviously we've come through a time where our sort of story, you have to tell it through TV shows or journalists or whatever. We have control of that. And I think as long as you're putting your best self on there, singing, talking about what we do, all the rest of it, nothing can go wrong. Until one day I stood in a field and said to the camera, this is my idea of a very nice day. And then it all went completely wrong.
So beware, everyone. Beware.
Yeah, it's a bit familiar vibe for creatives. You have creative, you know, total creative control until you don't.
Yeah.
Actually, often children are the harshest creative directors, so you've got to watch out. But you guys also bring the creative element into your tours. So one of the things you're really well known for is your set design. So you have lots of different things, huge eyeballs, mechanical elephants, you know, burning staircases. Tell us a bit about that vision and why it matters.
Again, we're probably touching it, all of us, but it's, I think we've always, from the very beginning, from when we've ever done any shows, we've always... The whole idea is to entertain the audience. You know, the whole idea behind everything, whatever the creation may be, is to put a smile on the people's faces and for them to go home and say they enjoyed the show, if, you know, for that 1.5 hours, 2 hours of their time. And I think for us to, you know, for us to be investing a lot of money into our shows, which is what we do, you know, obviously you've got to try and get it back because it's a business at the end of the day. But it's basically just to entertain the people and for them to be happy. That's the best bit about the whole thing when you do an album, because normally the album, when you write an album, that normally tells you whereabouts you probably want the tour to go. And as you're writing a song, you already have the ideas for certain ways of the way that song is going to be performed on stage. And the best bit is, like you say, is actually trying to create that show. And
you know. That's really interesting. So you sort of have the visuals in your head even as you're writing the music.
Yes, do.
Yeah. It's, I don't know exactly where, I don't know whether it's partly because, again, our background and what we grew up sort of doing, but when we first started, a big part of us was, even when we were playing in the small clubs, we wanted to be the best. I mean, in our heads, we were Madonna, even though we weren't, you know. But in our heads, we had the leather gig. I mean, we thought we were always aimed at the top. I don't know whether that's...
We were more the village people, though, weren't we?
You know what, maybe, but it, you know, our ambition, and we talked about it earlier, was always so high, and that's never we've not found a way to lessen that. We've not found a way. We don't know how to make it small. We always want to be the best. We want to be competing at that level where the best stage shows. I mean, we're very fortunate where we've been able to put on productions and shows that, you know, have inspired other artists to on their shows. And I think that that's, when we were growing up, we were inspired by other artists. So now for us to be able to do that and inspire other people on when they're putting their shows together and for them to reference the things that we've done on stage, I mean, it doesn't get better than that, really. That's what we want to do.
Well, it does get a little bit better, Mark, because you have also kind of spread yourself into new genres outside just performing. So let's talk a little bit about films and musicals. You actually created your own musical biopic in 2017, and you turned it into a feature film last year with an incredible cast, which was a big hit. So tell us about that. Why do it? And what did it mean?
Well, the initial idea came probably 10 years before it actually hit the stage. Is that we talked about how we could possibly make a show that involved our music but wasn't our story.
Yeah.
And so that was... Because for us, I think that we always try, even in our live shows, we go, oh, let's do us, like, even if you've never heard of us and you've not seen us before, we want you to be able to enjoy it. We want you to be able to be a part of that that journey, that story. And so that was a part of our conversation. And then I think it was mainly about us just listening. Sometimes you listen and you find, you see what feels right, a story that felt right for us to be able to go on that journey with. And we were very fortunate to know an amazing stage director called Tim Firth as well, who's done lots of great stage productions like Calendar Girls. And we were able to have the conversation with him and then go into development. But it doesn't end, you know. That has never ended for us. We're always looking at new ways and trying to find new ways to keep us going as a brand and to help us to grow. And those conversations, we love being a part of those conversations, you know, film, and we love all the entertainment aspects and all the different parts that can bring. And so we want to be involved because it's much nicer to be involved in this entertainment world than it is when it's not. And then maybe there's something where we all had 10 years off, which made us really realize that. It made us all realize, oh shit, it's not that much fun when you're not in it. Mm-hmm. So how do we stay in it? And so that was, I think, something that has driven us through our careers, really, is how do we keep staying this? How do we have new ideas, new music, new songs? Gary comes in, I've got something new, and it sounds new. So we've never been the type of band that has gone, oh, this is where we are and this is what we do. We always feel like we grow, and I think we've done that as human beings as well.
I think the one thing we always fear is repetition. We don't like to ever, ever feel like we're doing something we've done before. And that's how I think we've managed to keep moving forward in the way we have, and whether that's getting involved in stage things and doing things we haven't done that scare us, things that, like, we've not been in this area before. It's trying never to repeat. And it's that's tough across 30-odd years, but it's something we share as a sort of rule that we don't do things we've done before. We move forward always.
And what are the kind of things that scare you? You know, beyond spiders.
I think, you know...
Just spiders.
Yeah.
I knew we were kindred spirits, Mark. I knew it.
I think the fact of, you know, just, you know, I think every time you release a tour or every time you do an album, you know, you can never count your chickens. It's always one of those things where you've written an album. Okay, we love this album and we're really into it and we feel that it should be released. But will the people out there like this album? You've always got to take a risk and you've always got to be a little bit scared, or even whether it's a creation on stage of a tour and you think, should we do that? Are the people going to like that section too, and where we go back to the 90s? And it is a nerve-wracking experience, but you've just got to take risks. You've got to take risks, and then like everyone in life, you learn from it. You can learn from failure, as what we have done in the past. And I think that's how businesses grow and be successful, by failure.
I think you're right. And you mentioned businesses there. So one of the things I wanted to ask you about was about the different brands you've worked with over the years. We've got lots of brands in the room here, whether it's the Meerkats and Compare the Market, M&S. You had a great partnership with Suzuki, which won lots of creative awards. You did stuff with P&O Cruises, Amazon. And you've also done loads of brand syncs, so featuring in films like The Kingsman and Stardust. So tell me about when you're thinking about these opportunities, you must have millions. So tell me what makes you say yes, and what do you care about when you're partnering with brands?
Well, I think one of the biggest questions we always ask ourselves is, what does it give our audience?
Yep.
Like, how many more lights can we have on stage? How many more musicians? How much more money can we spend on the cameras? How does a brand come into you, further the growth of what you're doing? It's like user experience for me. It's like, how does our audience benefit from it? Because if our audience benefit from it, then there's probably something worth looking at in here. And whether that's, you know, adding value to our movie or adding value to our tour, or if that person's bought their ticket and they're going to get more because of this brand, then we're interested. And it pretty much starts and ends there. And I think from that point, then we look at it as an opportunity for making what we do bigger and better.
That's a great philosophy. And you always looking for things you haven't done before. You said you never like to repeat yourself. So you get excited by new opportunities that brands can bring you.
Yeah, and it's just nice to work with other creative heads as well, because there is three of us, and we love being creative, but we don't always know everything, and we don't always have the best ideas. And but it's really nice to sometimes feel like you're supported. I guess you support each other when you work with a brand. You can sit with, there's more people around the table, which is always nice to have these chats, to have these conversations. Sometimes a bit boring, just us three. Yeah. It's us three again chatting about. But it's nice to have other people and to meet other people. And I think that in life, experience, and that's the main thing that Take That has given me in life, I guess, is life experience. And mm-hmm. And that started, I came from a town called Oldham, which is north of Manchester, a little town. I hadn't really left the town. And then I went and joined this band. And then I came to London. I was like, oh my God, I'm in London. And then I tried Indian food. I was like, oh my God, this is Indian food. And I was going home telling my mates in Oldham, have you tried Indian food? They're like, no, I've never tried Indian food. We've got to go and try it. And so life experience.
Is there any Indian restaurant brands out there?
But I think that is the thing that I can say that has been the most wonderful thing about being in this band is life experience. And that hasn't stopped. And even now, for us to have those experiences that are new, whether that's going to countries that we haven't played in before. I'm so grateful for that, to be here. The main reason we came here today is because, we haven't done anything like this before, have we? So let's go and have this life experience and see what it feels like. Probably won't come again, but, we might not be invited. But that's what it's about, And then we'll move on with life and we can go. Do you remember that time?
I can't take it badly, Mark. Gary did say you never do anything twice. So we knew this was a one-shot deal.
But that is the most wonderful thing that I can say I got from the band, and probably can speak. Actually, I can't speak for those guys, but I think that's what we have got that from Take That, and then we can try to offer that to other people. So we can try to offer our life experience to other people through music, through our songs, through our shows, and if we can do that and in a positive way, then it doesn't get better than that. I don't think. I haven't found that yet.
It feels like you're kind of super collaborative. And I know we talked about the films and musical already. Oh my God, someone's done. They're finished, Dave.
One's just waking up. That's kind of cool.
Oh man.
Let's see if we can get
the first time that has happened is that the first time that has happened or not?
No.
Not
all the time,
unfortunately.
I mean, people often sleep through me, so it's not a big surprise. But I was going to ask you guys, you're doing something really interesting. So you're going to Malta. You're putting together what is a 4-day kind of festival experience. I assume that's where I'm actually doing the Lulu bit, although we haven't discussed it. Yeah. With some special guests, you've got the Sugar Babes, who did a performance with us here at Advertising Week on Tuesday.
Oh, wow.
So that's very cool. So tell us a bit more about that and some of the other new stuff you've got in store.
This is a new one for us again. Interesting. We believe it's going to become popular, this. It's an interesting one that we assume touring every 4 years would be enough for our audience. It's not. There's a certain amount of our audience.
They're demanding,
Barry. More. They do. They want more. And we've looked at a few versions of this. There's a cruise version of this where you go on for 4 days, you do a gig, et cetera, et cetera. We looked at all this. We actually looked at something in Tenerife as well, similar thing. But Malta came through and it looked like they were doing this experience very well. They'd done it before on a smaller scale. What a brilliant thing. Buy a ticket, come, you get, 4 or 5 great artists. We're doing like a remake of our 1993 album Everything Changes on the Saturday night. We do a full show on the Sunday night. We've got Sam Ryder. We've got it's a great program.
And I'm DJing, don't forget,
on Friday.
Bad night, yeah.
I was DJing on Friday.
Yeah, I heard that's the best night actually.
It will
be the best night. Yeah.
And it's
we might have to try and find him for where's Howard gone?
But it feels new and exciting.
Yeah.
And we've had a great reaction to it. And again, I think it'll become popular, this, across bands that have dedicated fan bases. Because we don't even call them a fan base. They're like an army, our fans. They come ready for action. Just one in here, but... the very loud one.
Oh, yeah, loud army.
Make a noise.
So tell me just a bit more. We talked a little bit about some of the work you'd done. You always want to try and find new experiences, new collaborations with some of the brands in the room, aside from obviously the Indian restaurants. They know they're on your radar. Are there other brands you'd love to work with, but you haven't? Anyone you'd love to hear from?
Oh, good grief.
Come on, guys. This is time.
I don't know.
I mean, I guess we all have our own interests as well, but obviously a brand has got to work for us, and it's got to work for the fan base as well, I believe, because Rolls Royce.
very good.
anything automotive for me is like, that's got my bowl. But again, it's got to work for everybody. It's got to be affordable. It's, this is one of the things we think about with our fan base. You know, you cannot take the mickey, you cannot take the piss. Everything, we try and give a real fair price to whenever we sell tickets for our concerts. And like I said, we want to put a smile on the face and know that they've got value for money. So whatever that branding is, has got to be, it's got to suit everybody,
You know that somewhere out there, the Rolls-Royce marketing director is writing down. Howard Donald says it has to fit everyone. Minivan, he's thinking about it. Yeah. Okay, guys, we've got about 10 seconds left of this. So we're going to go for a last quick fire quiz just to check whether you do really know each other at all, whether you learned nothing over the years.
Yeah.
We know Howard lost it in the 90s, but we're hoping Gary and Mark have still got something left. So we're going to test you on each other.
Okay.
This quiz is called Take That, Take That. Don't worry, you can trademark it later.
How long did you spend thinking about that?
About 4 seconds. Oh, yeah. The collaborative process with me and my brain cell. Okay, there's only a few. How many times have you played the O2 Arena?
Well, we got given an award the other day for playing it the most, I think, haven't we?
How many, though? I can't remember how many.
It was 39 times, I think.
Oh, my God. He got it right. He knew his stuff. Right, to be honest, these ones are quite easy. How many chart-topping albums have you had?
Well, it's in one of Mark's intros on tour, this.
Is it?
Yeah.
No, it's Howard. You say it. No, Howard
says it.
Don't cheat, Howard. Seven. It's for you.
Seven. I think it was seven number ones during the 90s.
Nice. No, he's right. That's right. Albums.
No, not albums. I think number ones, but albums. Yeah. Five? Possibly. I don't know.
Who knows? The 90s.
Anyway,
are hard.
Still here. Who cares?
Right, we're going to take it off step. How many songs have Take That commercially released?
My goodness.
I won't have a clue.
Say 30 something. 32, I'm going to say.
No, Gary, you're off by a clear 100. So anyone else?
We've made a lot of music videos that we do know over time. And it's the hardest thing. That is always the bit that when we make music videos to try and get, that's hard. That's the tough part, isn't it? We've made a lot of them.
Yeah.
Some of them have been more enjoyable than others.
I think you've taken a creative deviation from the quiz to the track.
From quick
lack
fire
of
round.
Knowledge. All right, last one. We're going to go
the answer
for this.
There, 139.
Good God, Gary. I didn't know you could read as well.
Right.
I didn't realise you'd bring all this creativity. So look, how many Brit Awards have you won?
I know that because I do announce that.
Yeah, you can.
Stage. So it's eight.
Yeah.
You are eight. Absolutely correct. Look, we've got to end on a high. Thank you so much.
Welcome.
Gary, welcome. Howard,
thank you.
Mark, and Take That.
Thank you, everybody.
Please,
thanks
don't
for the invite.
That.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Advertising Week Europe 2024 in audio. Stay connected with us on social media using the handle @AdvertisingWeek and visit our website europe.advertisingweek.com for more exclusive content. This podcast was produced by Podcander, the audio conference solution.